Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. Today's Baseball America Podcast is sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America Podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20 today. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Thank you, Dave Slade, and welcome to another College Baseball Podcast here at Baseball America and BaseballAmerica.com. Visit us on iTunes. We've had some nice reviews lately. And actually, the podcast listed in the What's Hot in the college section of the Sports and Recreation Podcast. That's the first time I've seen that happen in 8-9 years of us doing these podcasts. So thanks, everybody, for the download. Joined by Jim Schoner, Mike Lanana, and Ted Cahill this week. And guys, I know you guys have soldiered on without me on a couple of funky, fresh podcasts the last 2 weeks. Since I haven't been here, Miami ascended to the number one spot in our ranking. I know you guys, a couple of you guys saw Miami this weekend. We'll just kind of go down the poll real quick, but we didn't have it. This feels like this is the most clear cut our top three has been all year. I mean, Miami, Florida, Texas A&M, these are the three teams that have been number one at some point during the season this year, Teddy. These three teams, especially A&M sweeping Mississippi State this weekend, those three teams feel like they are. It's a pretty clear demarcation there, not just in our rankings, but in how these teams are playing, right? I mean, like, outside of both A&M and Florida have each lost one series, as has Miami, but the series lost here all to each other, basically, right?
Yeah, and those three teams are all, I mean, they have 29 wins. Florida has 33, the other two have 29, and they all went on the road and won this weekend. Florida and A&M both swept, like you mentioned. A&M went into Mississippi State and got a sweep in Starkville, which had just gone to Gainesville to beat the Gators. So that was loud, and A&M is playing really well right now. They've scored 10 or more, I guess it was 10 runs in their last five SEC games. They've since losing to Florida, they've really, really figured things out and gotten on a better track. And Florida, you know, rolling again. They beat Florida State midweek. They go into Arkansas and they sweep the Razorbacks. We're scuffling a little bit, but Florida, you know, taking care of business, coming off of that series loss. And Miami handling being number one for the first time since 2008, just fine. They dropped a game at Duke, but, you know, otherwise it was a good week for the Hurricanes. And Duke has beaten some good teams this year, so that was a nice series win in Durham for Miami. And yeah, I mean, those three teams, they're really talented and they're playing really well. And I think all of us just feel like those are the three best teams in the country right now.
I mean, Mike and Jim, you guys saw Miami this weekend, did you not? I mean, did Miami look like a number one team? I mean, Jim, you've seen a lot of this over 9 years here. I mean, Miami looks like a number one team, doesn't it?
Yeah, they look really complete. I mean, they did get a rough out. I didn't see the Friday game, but I saw them Saturday and Sunday. They did have one rough outing from Michael Mediavilla on Saturday, but they came back. Danny Garcia was great Sunday. The offense picked it back up. It was Zach Collins. It's a big three-run home run. Willie Abreu had a good game on the Saturday game. But I mean, it's just a really deep, really, other than really their number nine guy who's like in the low 200s, but like their top eight hitters are all dangerous. They all bring something to the table, whether it's speed or power or just hitting ability. So they're very good, and they've been, you know, they lost that 2 out of 3 at home to Florida, but otherwise they've been very, very consistent.
And they've won 12 in a row before Saturday, and then when you lose one, I kind of like the way, and you quoted Zach Collins talking about it, Teddy, saying, yeah, we got a little big-headed on Saturday, and then you respond against Brian McAfee. Not like he's a dominating pitcher, but he's been very effective for most of the year.
He has a lot of big wins. I mean, he beat Virginia. He beat Georgia Tech. There's another one that, I mean, he's gotten wins for them.
He's one of the better Sunday starters in the country. Most teams don't have that good of a Sunday starter. I can tell you that North Carolina and NC State and a lot of these other teams in our rankings would like to have Brian McAfee as their third starter and to come back and kind of dominate that Sunday win 9-0. I thought that was just an impressive show. But then after those top three guys, after that clear-cut top three, didn't seem like, Mike, when we met last night on the conference call Sunday night, we didn't really have a clear four or five. 4 through 10, is this too much for me to say that you could kind of throw 4 through 10 in a hat? Is there any separation for you in that group of teams?
Yeah, you know, Last night was a difficult call for all of us, I think. I mean, we had, I think it was five of our top 10 teams all had losing weekends, which, you know, obviously led to some shuffling. I think we all, I mean, it was interesting. Usually it seems like we're on the same page when it comes to the top 10, but I think we all had kind of a different ordering for these next groups of teams. You know, I don't think there's a big separation. I know one team that we kind of struggled with placing was Louisville.
Right.
Just because they haven't won on the road this year. But you look at their overall resume and you look at the wins that they do have. And, I mean, 29-7, I mean, and obviously they swept Clemson this weekend, an impressive showing there, you know. So, it's tough at this point to say any of those teams really separate themselves. Mississippi State is really tough to read,
yeah.
Just because you look, I mean, they're 24-12, but you look at the series wins that they have. I mean, they were our number two but team last week for good reason. But
and it was like their resume coming into this week,
yeah,
was as good if not better than anybody's resume.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden,
but getting swept at home, and
yeah. In Jim Callis terms, they fouled the bed. Jim usually used a harsher word, but that's the clean podcast edit version. And we had a pretty difficult time. Like you said, they were the toughest team to place in our top 10. If you don't have the BA top 25 in front of you, Miami, Florida, A&M. We went up with TCU at 4. That's really more like TCU hasn't done anything really egregious all year. But they're also not even leading the Big 12. Texas Tech, I believe, is leading the Big 12.
Yeah.
LSU, I don't feel like LSU's overall resume stacks up necessarily next to Mississippi State's. But they have played better of late.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Louisville. I mean, Louisville's got three series losses, but they're all good series losses. And I guess the main part was really kind of we debated how far to hit Mississippi State and kind of what to do with that. I mean, Jim and I, being the old line, old guard BA guys that we are, we're both like, sweep at home must be punished.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, I mean, that was really kind of it, wasn't it, Jim?
I mean, yeah, pretty much. I mean, certainly a series win at Florida and a series win at Vandy on their resume is, and there's really no one that has two road series wins as good as those, but you can't get swept at home.
Yeah.
It's and just that kind of loses you a lot of goodwill, at least for me.
But we did keep them ahead of Vanderbilt. They won that series. Vanderbilt, it feels like Mississippi State has more good series wins than just about anybody except for those top three teams in the rankings. I mean,
yeah, and they, to me, still probably have the best series win on the board. Florida beating Miami maybe is better. I don't know. I go back and forth on whether Mississippi State beating Florida is better than Florida beating Miami. But, I mean, they have one of the two best series wins on the board at worst. And they beat Vanderbilt. And, I mean, this weekend was weird, but A&M is just incredible right now. And so I was not looking to hit Mississippi State as hard as, some...
as we wound up doing.
Right. But... you know, like Jim said, you can't, don't get swept at home. I mean, that's not a good look no matter what. But, I mean, the talent the Mississippi State has is, it's real, it's there, and I wouldn't be worrying too much. I didn't drop them out of my 8 for Omaha. I mean, they have proven they can play with anyone and beat anyone. They just did not do it this weekend for whatever reason.
And on A&M, so I guess first time since 1987 they've scored double digits in five straight games. Has there been an offensive player or two who's really jumped out, guys, to you guys? I mean, I think that, like, to me, when I look at when I watch those guys, Melton at first base, doesn't matter how big the ballpark is, he's going to hit it out. Feels like Michael Barris gives him a great veteran leader behind the plate. I feel like he's contributed more offensively this year. Nick Banks is Nick Banks. I mean,
Boomer White, the TCU transfer, has been he's hitting over 400. He's been a huge addition.
And that, it feels like who else? Well, that's one example of Boomer White. It feels like they're not just a one or two guy. You can't just be one or two guys to score that many runs up and down the lineup, Teddy.
No, it's a very deep lineup. That's really what A&M has going for it. You know, if you're looking at pitching or hitting, it's just there's so much depth there, and it's not necessarily the most prospect depth. Hunter Melton is a first baseman, and he is what he is. Boomer White is, he's not an elite prospect by any means, but they're just a bunch of really, really good college players and guys that have the tools to succeed at this level, and. You know, maybe they'll keep it going in pro ball, but they're not elite prospects. But it's just 1 through 9; they're just all hitting. They have, I don't know, it's like 10 guys hitting over 300 or something. I mean, it what A&M can throw at you is just a lot of different ways to beat you. And, you know, it's Melton hitting home runs. They have some speed. You know, Nick Banks, you know, is a very diverse player.
Yeah, well-rounded guy.
Yeah. I mean, but they have two guys with more than 10 stolen bases. You know, they have Melton there with 9 home runs. Boomer White does not strike out. He has 7 strikeouts this year in 36 games. And, you know, so it's a disciplined team, it's a veteran team, and it's just a very deep lineup.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to look at them and see, like, just how many guys have contributed offensively to them. And they kind of look like an NC State offense here locally that, like, does have a deep lineup, only this team has more power and just up and down. They're deep, but it's a significantly better lineup. And I'm also impressed by A&M, just that they have had bad news this year, whether it's a rough weekend or injuries. Nothing has seemed to really slow the mix up for Florida. I mean, they had one bad weekend. Otherwise, it just feels like A&M has kind of been a steamroller. Another part of this top 10 that jumps out to me, guys, I know this is not new territory, but it's a very SEC-heavy group. How many of these teams, I mean, Jim, you're our show nerdology guy. Are all these teams in the mix for top 8 national seeds in hosting, or is there one team that whose resume maybe we have them higher? Like, is LSU's RPI put them on the outside looking in compared to like a top 8 or a host?
Yeah, I mean, LSU is kind of the interesting one. I mean, see, the thing is, like, we have all these teams that are so high in the RPI, and it's just, I have to go through and see if it's ever happened. I don't think there's ever been a conference that's gotten 4 national seeds in 1 year. I'd have to go back through. I know there have been years where they probably could have. I mean, last year it looked like they had a chance to, and I think they ended up getting 2 from the SEC. But yeah, I mean, you've got Florida, A&M, and Miss State last week. Those were my 3. This week I'll probably last week was Florida, South Carolina, and Mississippi State. South Carolina, which also lost this weekend.
Right.
But, anyway, so this week it'll probably swap out at least. So to drop Mississippi State, probably bring A&M back in up there. But, yeah, I mean, all those teams are in the running. LSU is a little further down in the RPI. I think they're like 13 right now. But, I mean, certainly they're in the mix to host. All these teams are. I mean, Ole Miss is still kind of up there. They're in the top 10, even though they're under 500 in the conference. I mean, yeah, all these – there's none of these teams are out of the mix. I think it'll just depend on how – you know, the conference standings turn out. I mean, Miss State's down in 3rd in the division now after this sweep. So really that puts them behind the 8-ball, really does.
It really does feel like there are only 4 teams. There are 4 teams in the SEC that are kind of out of it. Tennessee, Missouri, Auburn, Arkansas is a surprise. Yeah. I think we thought those teams, but at 4-11, they're tied for last in the entire league. Auburn's 5-10 in the league. They're the only team in the whole conference under 500. You talked to Scott Strickland yesterday, Teddy. I guess Georgia is kind of the only real X factor. Everybody else in the SEC is playing for, like, are we going to be a 1 seed or a 2 seed? Are we going to have a chance to host a regional, that kind of thing? Georgia's really, like, the only bubble SEC team. And I would say they kind of put themselves back on the bubble this week by beating the Gamecocks. And here's your reward, 4-game roadie at Clemson in Florida. I mean, they really kind of have to – and they also go to Vanderbilt next weekend, so – this is not an easy way to get into it, but this is what it is. It's the SEC, and like Scott Strickland told you, Georgia should probably go to regionals every year. How would you handicap their chances of going there this year?
Well, it was like when I was looking at that, I mean, I knew it had been a while, but it's been since 2011 for Georgia. I mean,
it's a long time.
It's a long time for them, and they missed the SEC tournament completely last year. So they're in good shape right now to go back to Hoover, which is step one, and then step two would be to find a way to get into the tournament. And they have their RPIs in the 30s right now. You know, they have some nice wins. It's just going to be a matter of can they stay around 500, above 500, because, you know, that's a cut line of sorts. And it's not going to be easy because they go to Florida, they go to Vanderbilt, they still have Ole Miss, and then they close at Missouri. And none of those are particularly easy. So I think they could do it. I mean, I don't know that I would have expected them to beat South Carolina at home this weekend anyway. So,
right.
You know, they just have to just have to keep their head above water somehow. And so far, they've been able to do it. They had an incredibly tough SEC schedule. Strickland, I didn't put this in there, I guess, but he said that, you know, when they saw it come out over the summer, they were like, oh boy. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You just got to go play it. And, you know, they've got a chance. It's an intriguing team. They're definitely playing pretty well right now after, you know, getting really beat down at A&M. They lost that series by a combined score of 30-3.
As I was saying, convincing fashion, if you didn't want to get specific. But it was ugly.
Yeah, that was not great. But they responded well, and you know, now it's four really, really hard games. And you know, if they can manage to go 2-2 this week somehow, you know, I think that'd be a solid week for the Bulldogs.
Anybody else worried at all, or am I making too much of this about the Gamecocks? It feels like South Carolina really, I mean, obviously, this team's had a great season, but that wasn't a great week. They gave up a lot of runs against North Carolina in the middle of the week, and I don't know. I feel like South Carolina, like, has pitched better than anybody imagined they would. Is there any worry about the fact they had two double-digit games this week, you know, on the mound?
I mean, they lost that Georgia series basically because Braden Webb and Josh Reagan, who had been two of their best pitchers, picked the same weekend to blow up.
Yeah.
Now, Georgia, you know, Strickland told me that what Georgia did was they laid off Webb's curveball. They forced him to throw it. They wanted to force him to throw it for strikes because he has a big 12-6 breaker that often finishes out of the zone. He couldn't land it for strikes, and so they were hitting his fastball. So maybe that's a path forward for other teams that they can copy. And if that becomes a blueprint, then that maybe is a concern for South Carolina. And Josh Reagan, I mean, it was going to happen at some point.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah, I would not be overly concerned about that. I mean, what happened in the midweek was very strange, and I don't really know what to make of that against North Carolina, a team that had been struggling offensively, dropping 15 runs.
And it was a little bit of help, but it wasn't even. It was like 15 runs in like the last six innings, wasn't it? Scoreless through three. Tyler Widener's pitching.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a very strange game.
So the last time South Carolina dropped a series, it was at Vanderbilt, and they responded with a nice 4-0 week. So we'll see what they do this week. It's a nice week for them. They get Missouri at home, and then they get Florida coming in. And
this is really their last kind of, I don't know if you would say breather, but this is their last series against one of those teams we talked about that's kind of clearly out of the running. So this is it. If you're looking for a breather, if you're a Gamecock fan or player, this is it. And they're tied for first with Florida. I mean, to me, it feels like if they win the SEC East somehow, they're going to be a top eight national seed, no matter whatever else comes through. So there's a lot on the line for them. I guess LSU was the other SEC team. I know we've talked a lot of SEC, but that was the other team I wanted to kind of touch on, guys, because it feels like their resume has been a little thinner, and yet when I look up and down their schedule, they really, for the most part, they win games against teams that they, you know, they got that poor start in the league with Alabama and A&M, but they have figured out how to right the ship since then. What's the main way they've righted the ship? I don't know which of you guys wants to be our LSU expert, but how have they righted that ship?
You know, I really think the key for them and the reason why they were struggling early on in SEC play is just figuring out what they're doing offensively. Just because, I mean, you look at how much they lost from last year. Last year, they're an offensive juggernaut. They lose eight of those nine starters in their starting lineup. It's going to take some time to put the pieces together and find, you know, the right combination. And, you know, you look at what they've done offensively over the last few weekends. I mean, this weekend against Missouri, you know, 7-5, 9-5, 15-2, you know, they're scoring more. They're scoring more consistently. You know, I think we always thought that they would have the pitching just because they bring back Poche and Lang. And I know Lang has had his struggles at times this year, but it seems like he's starting to right the ship a little bit. So I think the key for them has really just been figuring out the offensive side, and they've done that over the last few weekends.
And this weekend, they had to do it. I mean, Tanner Houck, that's not somebody that you get right against offensively.
I mean, we can talk about how Missouri's out of it or whatever in terms of their RPI is and everything, but what they do is they pitch.
Yeah.
And when you have to face Reggie McClain and Tanner Houck on the first 2 days, I mean, that is not an easy task. And, you know, they go out and they score runs in those games, and they're able to win those two games on the road, and then they finish off the sweep with a nice 15-2 win. I mean, it is the offense for me that's doing this for LSU, and it was another good weekend. They scored on Vanderbilt last weekend.
Right.
You know, they beat Sheffield and they beat Kyle Wright. I mean, it's they're starting to beat good pitching, and they're going to face more of it this week when they play Mississippi State.
That's a pretty good sign. They're not just doing it against lesser clubs and lesser pitchers. Because when I've seen Tanner Houck this year on SEC Network or on TV, I mean, that guy's nasty.
He's got electric stuff.
He was good last summer. I mean, I know, like, if I'm thinking sophomore pitchers around the country, the first three that really do pop up to my mind are Bukauskas for North Carolina, Tanner Houck, and Alex Lang. And Lang and Houck are facing each other this weekend. And, you know, neither one of them makes it into the seventh inning. But for Alex Lang, that seems like that was actually progress, that he didn't walk five guys, kept his team in the game, and winds up out-dueling Tanner Houck in a game that was a little bit more offensive than you might expect with those two guys pitching.
Yeah, so. I definitely would also think Fado and Clark Schmidt. But, I mean, those two guys, that was a nice preview for the 2017 draft class on Saturday.
Those five guys are pretty good. That's a good. That's a better group than what we have this year in the junior class. There's not a doubt about that.
Yeah.
So it's a Baseball America podcast. I do want to remind you that if you've ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online, most sites make it complicated and then try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. And we want to remind you that SeatGeek pulls all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time, you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming games, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. I'm sure that if the Carolina Hurricanes were in the NHL playoffs, Jim Schoenert would be using SeatGeek for hockey tickets. Unfortunately, you'll have to be using those for Washington Capitals tickets.
Before this, to Vince Lauer, get some Blackhawks tickets.
Yeah, I mean, that's our closest Stanley Cup tickets hookup. But, you know, what they do for SeatGeek, they don't even use hockey terms. They just use red, yellow, and green. They give you a grade on every ticket and every seat based on value, so you can immediately find the underpriced seats. And before you buy, you use their detailed maps to see the view from where your seat would be. Best of all, SeatGeek's honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, SeatGeek allows you to see the full ticket price from start to finish and never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. Baseball America podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So to get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, and enter the promo code BA20, that's BA20, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download that free SeatGeek app today and enter the promo code BA20. And we want to thank SeatGeek again for being part of the Baseball America podcast. That's a good time to transition elsewhere. I mentioned J.B. Bukauskas because I am interested in the ACC a bit. But to me, the jumping off point for that league is not Bukauskas in North Carolina. It's you guys got to see Florida State in here this weekend. You guys talked a little about Miami, but Florida State did not show out as well, Mike. You saw them against Wake Forest a couple of times.
Yeah.
Wake Forest certainly has kind of been like bubblicious for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And usually their bubble bursts. I don't know how much beating Florida State could help them. It feels like the bigger problem is that they're 22-17, kind of a borderline top 50 RPI. But I take it that your look at the Seminoles wasn't glowing.
Yeah, well, you know,
it's
one look. It's one look. It's one weekend. But going into that series, especially knowing the ballpark that they're playing in, I was figuring we'd see three high-scoring games. You know, I thought maybe, you know, Florida State might drop 20 at one point. Right. You know, you never know.
As they're apt to do.
Yeah, and, you know, and so I was shocked on Friday to see that FSU lost 9-0. I mean, Parker Dungey for Wake Forest, who's, you know, far and away their best pitcher on that staff. I mean, he, for seven innings, he said after the game he didn't have his best stuff. He wasn't able to, like, the slider wasn't there for him as much as he'd like it to be, but he still was able to quiet a potent offense and a very patient offense, was able to throw strikes and locate the fastball. And then you look at Sunday, they hold Florida State to just two runs on that day, really with almost a Johnny Holstaff approach on that day. So I was surprised, first of all, just to see the limited offensive output from Florida State other than that Saturday game.
Unexpected.
Right. And no. And looking at Wake Forest, you know, I give them a lot of credit. Even in the game that they lost, 13-8, they were down 10-4 at one point. They scored four runs in an inning, making a 10-8 game. I mean, they were in every game. They were competitive. They weren't intimidated, certainly, by the Seminoles. And it was a good, really an imperative bounce-back weekend for them after getting swept at NC State. I mean, they needed that to remain at least somewhat in the conversation. And, I mean, there's a path for them. I mean, they're hosting UNC this upcoming weekend. That's a winnable series.
Again,
given the way UNC has played lately, And then, you know, they have road trips to Virginia Tech and Boston College. Those are winnable series. They finished with Louisville at home, which is where you'd want to play Louisville. You know, Louisville obviously is going to have the edge in that series. But, you know, I could see a path for Wake Forest, but obviously they need to win. They need another, you know, marquee series win.
You hit on the key point is that they are not good on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, so even if you're playing Boston College and Virginia Tech, BC and Virginia Tech are looking to those like, that's a series we can win because Wake has struggled on the road.
I mean, even if you beat bad teams on the road, it still helps you RPI-wise, but they haven't won a road series all year. They're 6-12 on the road, and it's kind of like you're saying, they're just kind of built to win in that ballpark.
Not like
that. No, they would not score well on the matrix there.
But,
I'll tell you what I'm surprised by is how well the ACC scores in the RPI. Six teams in the top 14, five top 10 teams. Clemson's, you know, a 667 team. That's fine. They've won 2 out of 3 games. North Carolina and Virginia is similar. Virginia's down at 36 in the RPI. I know Clemson's had a pretty good schedule. Get swept this weekend. It just doesn't seem like Clemson is a top 10 team. We don't even have them ranked. What's the glitch in the matrix there that's got five ACC teams in the top 10, or is there a glitch?
It's hard to explain.
It's
tough to figure. I mean, Clemson, you know, they won that South Carolina series, and that's really all they've done. I mean, I think they're getting, I feel like the whole, if I can just kind of, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, the fact that Pittsburgh has played well, Pittsburgh plays a lot of road games. They're 17-14, number 40. That's going to raise everybody up. And BC's been better. And that's another team that plays a lot on the road. So I feel like those two teams, that's going to kind of raise everyone up.
I think what the ACC doesn't have this year that they've had a lot of years is an anchor.
They have one, but they don't have like three.
Right. It's kind of like the SEC has three teams outside.
And the ACC doesn't. Pitt's 40, Duke is 52. You know,
right.
I mean,
BC's the only other team outside the top 52. Everyone in the league is in the top 52, but BC at 81. And Virginia Tech down the 180s. Packy Naughton, not happy about seeing that. Just Packy Naughton. Gotta keep saying it all year. That's a fantastic name. But Pittsburgh is one of those teams, like, I just didn't understand that their RPI would be that high. I know they had to play a lot of road games. That's a team that played the first third of the year without its ace.
I
wasn't terribly impressed with them in person, but I was impressed with their grit. Is Pittsburgh an at-large team? I mean, like, can they steal a bid from somebody else? Their schedule down the stretch feels doable. Their road series, they have a road series at Miami.
That's home. Oh, that the other way. They play Miami, Ohio at home this weekend.
Yes. Correct. Yes, not Miami, Ohio. They play both Miamis. That might be the only common opponent for both Miamis. But their ACC series remaining are Virginia, at Notre Dame, at Miami, home to Duke. They win 3 of those 4 series, or as Ray Tanner would say, series. I don't know how they're not going to get in with that RPI. Obviously, they have to do it. But it feels like this is going to be a record-setting year, potentially, for the ACC for bids.
It feels plausible, but at the same time, these middle-of-the-pack ACC teams are going to take themselves out, I feel like. Like, we can't get a feel for who's good and who's not in that middle-of-the-pack. We've talked about that a lot.
Right. And Notre Dame...
Well, all of a sudden,
Clemson,
Notre Dame's playing really well. Yeah.
Right.
Clemson is trending the wrong way. And
Notre Dame and Clemson, and then North Carolina, Virginia, Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh, all those teams have between 8 and 9 wins in the ACC.
Yeah.
The only team that's really separated, that used to be in that pack, that has separated itself from that pack, is the pack. And that's why I went that whole rigmarole there.
Packing on.
That's right. It started with that. But NC State, and I feel like the reason NC State has done that is that outside of Miami, they're this other deep lineup. You know, they're second in the ACC in batting average. They're second, I believe, in slugging, if not third in slugging. I think Pitt's slugging numbers are really jacked up from playing Grambling early in the year, and they had a bunch of home runs that weekend. But it feels like, you know, Louisville has this just very explosive offense. But NC State's the other one, and I didn't think they could do that, Jim, because they strike out so much.
Exactly.
But it really feels like NC State's found a way to be more consistent offensively. I don't want to give too much credit to Brett Kinnaman, this freshman left fielder, but NC State does feel like they're more sustainable offensively now than they were a month ago, when it was like, okay, did Chance Shepard hit a home run today? No, then Penn State didn't score. They put up 23 this week. I know it's Elon. I know Elon's struggling, but 23 is you don't do that by accident.
No.
They did it mostly on their own. It wasn't like North Carolina walked them 10 times like they did against Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Kinnaman's been a nice little addition there, a little fine as a freshman. I think, you know, they've kind of played around with where to put Brock Dethridge and Josh McClain. They're two speed guys to kind of get the most out of them. Both those guys have hit well. And they've kind of, I feel like Preston Palmeiro has been a little up and down, but when he gets hot, that's a big piece for them. Same with Andrew Kisner. And Chance Shepard, I mean, he's got all kinds of power. He kind of struggled in conference play, but he hit a grand slam yesterday in the
game. Do not throw him a fastball.
Yeah, exactly.
Or do not hang a curveball that he sees early.
Yeah.
He punishes mistakes for sure.
But yeah, I think, I mean, it's a kind of like we said, they don't really have a you know, they don't have that one guy say that you would say, oh, we can't let him beat you. Or then maybe, you know, like we're saying with Shepard, we don't throw him a fastball.
Right. But
they have a lot of, you know, they have 7-8 guys that can all, kind of like with Miami, like I said, they all can do something for you.
Those are all preseason top 25 teams we're talking about, and a lot of these ACC teams, Louisville, these kind of Florida State, NC State. The conference that's the opposite of the ACC is the Pac-12 right now. I mean, this is the other conference that you think of as a power conference in college baseball. The Big 12 has fallen off a bit the last couple of years. You know, the Pac-12 has swollen up as a league. It used to be the Pac-10, now it's got 11 baseball teams. I never, ever thought, Teddy, I would look at the Pac-12 standings halfway in and have Utah at the top. And that the only former six-pack team at the top is Cal. And Cal is struggling in this kind of post-Dalton Jeffries world they're living in right now where their Friday ace has been laid up. I mean, the biggest shock, I guess, in the Pac-12 is the O-State ball is losing a series to Wazoo. What in the wide world of sports is going on in this league? Nothing. Cats and dogs are living together. I don't understand anything in this league anymore.
No, I mean, like the Oregon State loss at Washington State maybe was the wildest thing, but we also still have Utah at 13-19 overall
in first place.
They've won more Pac-12 games already this year than they've ever won in a season since they joined the conference. I mean, for a while it was the Big 12 that was the most confusing thing ever to me. I think we've kind of settled on the Big 12 standings at this point.
Right.
The Pac-12 remains completely befuddling. Oregon State going to and losing that series to Washington State is just I don't know. I mean, Washington State does not compute. Washington State had won 10 games going into that series overall. They were 10-19 going into that. And Oregon State is a good team. Like maybe they're not as good as we thought preseason when we thought they were a top 10 team.
Certainly the Rasmussen injury hurts them.
It does, but I mean, they still won 22 games before this weekend.
Right.
Like, I mean, I know the schedule is not the most imposing thing you'll see, but neither is Washington State. Like, so
they are not the most imposing thing you will see. Dominican trip though. Wazoo, one of these teams that took a Dominican trip.
They did.
You wrote about the in the off season about the bonding, the international trips. Obviously, it's a new coaching staff, some new energy at Wazoo. It's just stunning to see that this is the weekend that it bears fruit.
Well, we have talked about teams that don't play well on the road, and it's weird that I'm about to say Oregon State doesn't play well on the road because they have to play on the road a lot, but
right.
They don't play well in true road games this season. They did fine when they went to the neutral sites in Arizona for the first couple weeks. But in their true road games this year, they are not doing so hot. You know, they got swept at Cal. They've now lost to Washington State in true road games. They're 4-5. And, so they're going to have to figure some things out. They go to Utah this weekend.
Right.
It's not easy to play in Salt Lake City. Obviously, the Utes are playing well. So they're going to need to figure out how to win games on the road.
It feels like a really gut check series for Oregon State because if they lose this series at Utah will be, I would imagine, somewhat emboldened by winning that series. And
if they lose this series, they're already at 44. I mean,
right?
Yeah.
You know, Utah is still sub 100 RPI.
Utah is the first place team in the Pac-12 and then the second to worst RPI in the Pac-12. Only Wazoo is worse. So if you're Oregon State and you lose back-to-back series of the two lowest-rated RPI teams, Jimmer, how soon do you start worrying about them as an at-large bid? I mean, forget it. There's just no way they're going to host a regional. Is there at this point?
No.
I mean, if they go on a miracle run to do that.
Yeah. I mean, so they're 44 right now, the Beavers are. They're, I think if they win enough of these series, I think they have like Arizona and US, you know, Oregon and stuff to play. So those are, they have enough top 100 games left. As long as they win them, they should be fine.
Right.
But yeah, so they got Stanford 65, Arizona 53. So there's enough there, but they've just got to play better. I mean, that's, they're 6-6. If you're a 500, if they finish around 500 and in the 40s, then you're squarely on the bubble.
Well, we had a few technical difficulties there, and we lost John Manuel in the process. But
he's
we were,
okay. He's not, he's just he had to leave.
Yes, the technical difficulties did not impair or did not injure John in any way. But we are down, John. We're still talking college baseball here. I'm Teddy Cahill. We still got Jim Schoenert. We still got Mike Lanana. You know, we're gonna close out the podcast with talking about some of the teams we brought in this week. We have three new teams this week. We have Michigan State at 23, Louisiana Lafayette at 24, and Coastal Carolina at 25. All three of those teams have been ranked already this season. ULL and Coastal both were preseason ranked. So it's not particularly surprising to see any of these teams here. They all had pretty nice weeks. Michigan State goes 4-1. They beat Michigan in a midweek non-conference. They won a series against Purdue on the weekend. Lafayette beat Southeastern Louisiana on the weekend. That was a nice non-conference series win for the Cajuns. And Coastal just keeps rolling in the Big South. They swept Presbyterian, and they beat Charleston in the midweek. Now, Jimmer, I know, previewed the Lafayette-Southeastern series for us in WePre last week. What'd you think of that series? It was a nice, fun series to get added to the schedule this year. I know that those teams were looking to maybe boost their RPIs a little bit. You know, what did you think of the way that played out?
Well, I mean, that's a pretty impressive series for Lafayette to go on the road or to pull out that Sunday game on the road. They won the Friday game at home, but you know, and they kind of did it, and they had to come from behind to do it. I think they were down like 4-1 or something in that game, and had to, you know, fight their way back. I mean, they're a, you know, Lafayette's more of a pitching and defense team. They haven't really been that explosive offensively, but and you know, Southeastern's been a good on the mound. They have, you know, deep rotation, good closer in Dominic Carlini, but they've you know, they were able, or Grania rather is the closer, but they were able to come back and win that game. And that's, so that's, I mean, Lafayette, you know, they're in the, as certainly they're in the hosting mix. I mean, they're 15th in the RPI. I think they're, you know, the stumbling block is they're still behind South Alabama, which I'll have a little more on them, but in the Sun Belt race, I should say, they're still second place. But if they can pull out and either, you know, maybe tie for the regular season or win the tournament, something like that, they could definitely be end up as a host. And so yeah, I mean, that was a really good that's about as good a non-conference series win as you can get, really, especially, you know, given the time of the year.
Yeah, the Sun Belt race got a lot more interesting this week. Lafayette obviously took a step outside of the conference to play that series. South Alabama had been 15-0, and they were playing at App State this weekend, last place Appalachian State, and they went and they lost a series in Boone. And App State going into that weekend had won 8 games. They were 8-25 going in, and their RPI is 242. And South Alabama really couldn't afford to lose that series. They still have a nice lead in the conference. They're 4.5 games up on Lafayette, but now they go outside of conference for this weekend, and Lafayette has a chance to make up some ground, and then those two teams play later this season at South Alabama. So South Alabama's still in the driver's seat, but that conference is definitely in play now, and that might be what it takes for one of those teams to get.
Yeah, I think definitely whoever wins that race is going to be in a good shot to host. They're both, you know, in the right RPI. South Alama is only, I mean, even though they lost that series, they're only down to 20, so that's still, you know, well within range, and you know, like Lafayette's. So whichever team, it's like Conference USA, whoever comes out on top of that race should have a good chance to host.
Now, Conference USA, we had Southern Miss ranked. We dropped them in favor of Coastal. Mike, that was a point of contention last night on the call. That was really the last thing we were trying to decide, was came down to Coastal and Southern Miss for that last spot. Southern Miss lost a series to Alabama-Birmingham. It was their first series loss in conference play this year. That's another series that they really should not have lost.
Right.
But they did beat Ole Miss in midweek, so they went 2-2 versus Coastal, which has just been rolling in the Big South, and ultimately we go with Coastal.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument to be made that Southern Miss's overall resume still good enough to keep them in the poll. And, you know, certainly that's an argument that we entertained and thought about for a while. But, you know, in general, when your top 25 team loses a weekend series, especially a weekend series that on paper should have won, you know, you drop that team from the top 25. I felt like from a pole mechanic standpoint, really with 23 through 25, you know, usually I feel like we have a tough time deciding who to drop sometimes. But this week, you know, when 23 through 25 all have losing weekends, it makes it a little bit easier, at least I thought. You know, as far as Coastal Carolina goes, I mean, they've just been very steady, really, these last few weeks. I mean, they've won 14 out of their last 15 games. You know, they're in first place in the Big South at 11-1. You know, they're taking care of business in conference. And, you know, their RPI, they're solid RPI-wise just because they played, you know, four tournaments to start the season, four straight tournaments, and, you know, a lot of tough matchups there. So, you know, they're a quality team, and just like Louisiana Lafayette, we had them ranked in the preseason, so we've liked them. So, you know, it made sense to me to bring them back in. And, you know, they have a couple of interesting midweek games this week against UNC, you know, a team that has been struggling a little bit lately, and against College of Charleston, another team that, you know, a loss against a team it should have beaten this weekend against Hofstra, but still two quality teams and two quality matchups, you know, especially RPI-wise for them. So it'll be interesting to see if they keep rolling this week.
The other thing about Coastal this week is they then play High Point on the weekend, and High Point is in second place in the Big South, and Coastal has a nice advantage there, but they can really solidify the Big South regular season title potentially. They're not going to clinch it or anything, but they can get a nice cushion going if they they get a series win this weekend. And the other thing about that Coastal Southern Miss argument for me is that Coastal doesn't have anything remotely like losing to Alabama Birmingham, which is not having a particularly good season. Coastal's got the one losing weekend. It's in a tournament. They lost to Ole Miss that weekend. They lost to Cincinnati, which is now leading the American Conference. To me, that I look at who you lost to a little more than I should versus who you beat. But to me, that was kind of a separator there. But the good thing for Southern Miss is that if they take care of business the next two weekends, you know, we'll find out exactly what Southern Miss is the next two weekends. They play Rice, they play Florida Atlantic. Those three teams together are the top three in the standings. Jim, I mean, we get Southern Miss at home against Rice, and then they go to Florida Atlantic. What are you looking for from the Golden Eagles the next couple of weeks?
I still like Southern Miss's team. I still think that's a pretty explosive offense. But, I mean, certainly that was not a series win. A series they should have lost. But they are still tied for first. They're tied with Rice. They get Rice at home. I mean, if they take care of business, I mean, Rice is playing very well. I mean, we keep boosting them up the rankings, and, you know, because they're earning it. So, I mean, you could certainly make an argument that maybe Rice should be favored. And plus, it's Rice. They always win Conference USA. So, they're kind of the default position. Yeah, so, but I mean, Southern Miss, I mean, they're good enough to win that series. I mean, it's going to be a good matchup for their offense against Rice's pitching. But whoever wins that, you got those three teams, FAU, Southern Miss, Rice. Whoever comes out on top in that race should host. I mean, there's a chance the two of them could. Can't rule it out, given the lack of hosts in the West. But, I mean, that's definitely a big series this weekend.
I touched on the American there really briefly. Tulane had been 24. They drop out after losing a home series to Cincinnati, which is now 6-3 in the league. This is a team that was pretty terrible last year, despite having Ian Happ, the ninth overall pick in the draft. But they're playing really well right now, and the American guys is confusing. They've only played three weekends, which makes it more difficult to sort things out when you've only played three weekends. But so far we have Cincinnati in first, and then UConn at 5-3. And then East Carolina, which is a team we thought would be good, but you know they're sitting there in third place with UCF, and then Tulane at 4-4. And Houston, who we thought was the preseason favorite for sure, 3-6. I know we talked about Houston and East Carolina when they played that series, but what are we making of this conference? I mean, this was a really good conference last year. Yeah. It was third in the RPI last year. A lot was made of that, and now this year, they're not. They're the number 7 RPI, and it just doesn't look like we have any kind of team like we did last year in the conference where Houston, you know, won the or hosted. And, you know, several teams were kind of in that mix. And
it was a 4-bid league last year.
Yeah, now it doesn't look like
it
that.
It might only be, it could be a one, I mean, it's possible it could be a 1-bid league. I mean, right now, the Pirates are the only team with a good enough RPI to even be in at large. They're 29. No one else is even in the top 50.
It's Cincinnati, 119.
They're the Utah of the American there. But, I mean, that Houston, I mean, you know, we love Lantrip and Romero, that rotation. I mean, that's, you know, that's been, I mean, those guys have pitched well, but they are just not hitting at all. I mean, I don't know how many runs they scored this weekend, but it was not the games they lost, they were getting shut down. I think I heard up they had scored, you know, 2 runs or less in 8 of 11 games or something like that. So they are just not hitting. They're 3-6, 68 in the RPI. Yeah, I mean, that league is, it was very, last year it was very compact, other than like the top, you had Cincinnati at the bottom, but the top 7 were all pretty tight. This year they're all tight, but it's just not the same quality. I mean, hey, sorry, Vince Lara, our American correspondent, but that league is just not having as good a year, unfortunately.
Yeah, there really isn't a team in that conference that separated itself from the pack. Yeah.
One thing that could happen here is East Carolina. I know you've seen them. The next 3 weeks, this is what they've got. They've got NC State and High Point this week, UConn, NC State again, Cincinnati, and then UConn, and then North Carolina. I mean, do you think they can get through that? And, I mean, if they do, I mean, Cincinnati and UConn are the two teams ahead of them. I mean, you would have to think at that point they'd be closer to first place, if not in first place.
Yeah, I mean, I could see ECU doing that. I mean, this is it's a tough division. I mean, the first 3 weeks have been, you know, really tough to predict. But, you know, I think ECU, of the teams that I've seen in the conference, while they're not the most prospect-heavy team, they seem like the most complete team just as far as what they can do offensively. And they pitch well. You know, Evan Krasinski has been great for them on Fridays. And, you know, they have a solid college, you know, weekend rotation. So, you know, they certainly do have a chance with their schedule here to make some noise and, you know, to possibly emerge at the top of the conference. They have the chance to separate themselves from the pack, but I feel like you could say the same thing about a couple of teams in that conference. You know, I feel like there's not a wide gap between, you know, the top team in the conference and the bottom team in the conference when I look at what they have talent-wise.
Yeah, I don't even know who the top team in the conference is.
Right, that's the thing. It's really tough. It's a really difficult conference to break down and handicap.
Cincinnati has been really good, obviously. They've won their first 3 series. They pitch really well. That was how they beat Tulane this weekend. Tulane's a pitching and defense team themselves, and Cincinnati beat them at their own game in their own park. And UConn throws Anthony Kay at you on Friday nights, and that's really tough for any team to match up against that. So they're always a tough, you know, they always are tough right at the start of a series. So, you know, I don't know how this is going to shake out. It wouldn't surprise me if Tulane, which is, you know, sitting there in the middle of the pack, is able to get going a little bit and get their way back to the top of the conference. But this was a weekend I think that they kind of needed, you know, home against Cincinnati. They really, it would have been a lot better for them if they had won that last game on Sunday. And if they had, we would have no, it would be, what is it, 5 teams then would all have 5 wins. So that's how tight this conference is that just Cincinnati winning that one game has provided us with the slight bit of separation that we do have 3 weeks into the season there. So those are the teams that came in and the teams that went out. We're getting down. We're in the second half. A lot of these conferences, I mean, not the American, but, you know, some of these conferences we're getting through to the second half of conference play. Even we're starting to get down to it a little bit. But was there anything that surprised you guys? Are we past the point of surprise at this point? You know, what stood out from the rest of the weekend?
Well, I think we touched on it a little bit, but the Charleston getting swept by Hofstra. I mean, I had Charleston as a host last week, and that's pretty much out the window now. I mean, their RPI is not too far gone. Like, they're down to 30, 31, but, I mean, you can't get swept by Hofstra. Hofstra's not having a good year. They're well under 500 overall. I mean, it was on the road, but still, I mean, that's a very bad series loss. And, I mean, Charleston, they're still in okay in shape to get an at-large as long as they don't mess up again. But that was a team that really cost itself a lot in one weekend.
Yeah, for me, I don't know if I was really surprised by anything so much. Obviously, those losses that we touched on were a bit surprising. But, you know, one thing that I like from this weekend is I feel like we're getting a little bit of a clearer picture of some of these conferences now, the pecking order. You know, I think what NC State did against Georgia Tech, you know, added a little bit of clarity to the ACC, a little bit. You know, it's still a little bit muddled there in the middle of it, but I thought that was big for them. And I think in the Big 12, obviously Texas Tech has established itself as a power in that conference. And, you know, the Pac-12 continues to establish itself as a mystery. You know, it's, you know, I expect to be surprised by the Pac-12 every week. I mean, we've obviously already talked about them in this podcast. We don't have to continue down that road. But
to be perfectly honest, I'm not quite sure whether you will hear all of our Pac-12 talk or not, but yes.
Yeah. So, but it is nice to get a little more clarity in some of these other conferences and to be able to see the picture a little bit better. That's one thing that I've liked now that we're in the second half of the season.
Yeah, and I just want to shout out Shane McCarthy, right-hander from Seton Hall, threw a perfect game on Friday. That's perfect game number 2 of the year in college baseball, joining Jesse Schultens at Wright State. That was a pretty impressive game for McCarthy. I mean, every perfect game is, but he did on 88 pitches. Yep. And he struck out 8 guys. So, I mean, that's a fair amount of pitches just to get those 8 strikeouts. So to get an 88-pitch perfect game against Long Island Brooklyn, very good for McCarthy and for Seton Hall, which is an interesting team in the Big East. We did not talk about the Big East, but Creighton, Seton Hall, and St. John's look like they're all going to be fighting up there. And McCarthy's tough to beat there on Friday nights when Seton Hall can throw him. So congratulations to him. It was a great weekend of college baseball. We're looking forward to another one. We want to thank you for listening. We want to thank SeatGeek for sponsoring this podcast and all Baseball America podcasts. Thank you to John, although he is gone, having messed up our recording. And thank you to Jim and Mike for joining me. I've been Teddy Cahill. Thanks for listening.
This concludes our program. Visit BaseballAmerica.com for more podcasts. Today's Baseball America podcast was sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20.